Conversations with Joan Lewis.
Hello, Joan, and welcome to another program.
Does it seem to you like we were in this studio 15 minutes ago taping last week's show? It certainly seems that way to me when we sit down to always tape a new show, new stories, new events, new visits of the Holy Father. He went, the last time that we spoke, he was about to go to the Gregorian University. He, of course, had been to the Lateran University earlier
this year.
Been there,
done that.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, similar and yet different messages. I mean, at the Gregorian, this is a Jesuit-run university, and it was celebrating several anniversaries, of course, this year. It's the 500th anniversary of the birth of two founders of the Jesuit Order, the Society of Jesus, along with St. Ignatius. Most people, all you hear your entire life is St. Ignatius founded the Jesuits. Well, there was also a Spaniard, Francisco de Jesus y Javier, and then Pierre Favre, who also helped him found this order. And this year also marks the 450th anniversary of the death of Ignatius in Rome in 1556. So There were a number of reasons, obviously, why the Holy Father went to the university. And even though parts of his talk were similar to what he said about academe, the raison d'etre of universities, of Catholic universities, in the case of the Gregorian specifically, he highlighted some of the things we've just talked about, its long history, and also He spoke of the various faculties at the university, the new faculties that have come into existence, but kind of underlining everything in the last point of his speech really was the Jesuits' fourth vow, which is obedience to the Pope. The vow, as he said it, the institutional total availability to the Roman pontiff in anything he may want to order.
And that is because the whole raison d'etre of the Jesuits is service to the church. And in service to the church, they would see the Pope as being in a position to know what the needs of the church are. Not everybody would know that the building that we now know as the Gregorian here in Rome was actually only built in 1930.
Right. And the ground was broken, I think, in 19. That's when Benedict decided that it had to have new, Benedict the 15th, that is.
But it actually grew out of the Collegio Romano, the Roman College, which is only a stone's throw away from the current Gregorian.
And that was founded in 1551, by not long after he founded the order. It actually did
It was Ignatius, actually founded by Ignatius.
Ignatius, right. So as a, it was in what we called it, the Roman College. So the Collegio Romano today, there's a building and a piazza that bear that same name.
Also, what not everybody would know is that directly at right angles to the Gregorian is the Pontifical Biblical Institute, or the Biblicum, and that is the foremost university for teaching
Bible
scripture
studies,
in the world. It's got the two bases here in Rome and also in Jerusalem. And that was specifically founded for teaching the teachers of the teachers of the Bible. So you've got a tremendous amount of scholarship within that one piazza.
Within a few meters, and to be honest with you, if you go out the front door of the Greg, bare just a little bit to your right, maybe 100 meters or less, is the North American College. And that was given by Pius IX in 1859 to the bishops of the United States for their seminary in Rome. It's really amazing, in a very small piece of real estate, how many ecclesiastical institutions there are.
Well, the Biblicum also has another bit of history, because not everybody will realize that is probably the place where Bunny Prince Charlie was born and where he died, and his brother Henry, whose bicentenary we celebrate next year, was the second longest serving cardinal in the history of the church, was also born.
For heaven's sakes, I didn't know that. I didn't also realize the second longest serving cardinal. Do we know who the first was?
I've forgotten.
Yeah, I don't think that I do know that.
And just around the corner is the Church of the 12 Apostles, where Philip and James are buried.
Very, very beautiful church. You know, we've been talking about the Gregorian University, which we who live here, we call a lot of things with nicknames, and we speak of it as the Greg. But we should also, if people perhaps have guessed, we're going to tell them now, that it was in 1554 that Pope Gregory XIII inaugurated new premises of the Roman College. Just 3 years after it was founded, it already needed new and larger premises. And he was considered the founder and protector of this school, and so the school eventually took his name and was called the Gregoriana, the Gregorian. And anyway, it's a university frequented by lay people, by religious, by priests, by missionaries. All over the world. I think it's 120 120 countries that are represented there. There's 1,600 students at the Greg, and from between 120 and 130 countries. And interestingly enough, I read a piece, not on its own website, but elsewhere, that said, among its alumni and faculty, it boasts 60 saints and blesseds, 17 popes, including 8 of the last 11 popes, over 900 of the world's 4,400 bishops, and a third of the College of Cardinals.
And not many universities can boast of that sort of role amongst its alumni.
I would guess maybe no other. We might look at the Angelicum, we might look at the Biblicum and see, but I'm going to guess no other. But in any event, he did meet with faculty members, he met with just the Jesuits alone, and then at the very end of his stay before he went back to the Vatican, he visited the year-old Matteo Ricci Convention Center. Of course, Father Matteo Ricci was one of the most famous Jesuits to ever live. He was assigned to the China mission and ended up spending 27 years there. As a matter of fact, he's buried in Beijing. So the Matteo Ricci Convention Center, it's very, very beautiful. I think the Pope probably has a good time when he actually goes out to these places. These are places he knows, he's been to. He's not walking in the door for the first time. But just to, I think, leave, obviously, the walls of the Vatican has to be a wonderful experience for him. And one thing the Holy Father said in his speech, which somehow seems to be placed, as it should justly, in so many of the talks he gives, he was saying that, you know, especially in a Catholic university, whose primary courses are theology and philosophy, the one thing you can concentrate on, man, you can have new courses, you can have humanities, you can have social communications, but man must be the focus of all of these, the dignity of man, but God is central to it all, no matter what your subject is. We saw that when he addressed the Academy, Pontifical Academy of Sciences, and they were meeting, they meet every 2 years on their plenary session. And interestingly enough, their topic this year was predictability in science, accuracy, and limitations. You know, the Academy boasts how many Nobel Prize winners, a third of its number, I think, are Nobel Prize winners. The Pope, in his talk to them, focusing on that area, he said, you know, we've seen in the progress of modern science and technology, one of the main causes of secularization, by the way, that's a word we're going to see in every one of his speeches, secularization and the de-Christianization, certainly in Europe and kind of spreading its way to other parts of the world. He said, we see, you know, technology, one of the main causes of secularization and materialism. And then he asked, why invoke God's control over these phenomena when science has shown itself capable of doing the same thing? And of course, he answers with, God created human beings, endowed them with reason, and set them over all the creatures of the earth. So man does have this free will. However, said the Pope, even with man working in science, the fields of science and technology, he said, they cannot replace philosophy and revelation, or answer man's questions about the meaning of living and dying, about ultimate values, and about the nature of progress itself. And then turning to the specific nature of the theme of this particular plenary session, the predictability in science, He said what scientists have to do among their ethical responsibilities in whatever they explore, he said, scientists have to avoid needlessly alarming predictions, something that is not really backed up by firm study and so forth. And he said they also have to avoid the opposite, which is a silence born of fear. Oh gosh, I'm not really sure what the consequences of this can be or what it can lead to. I don't have the data, so I won't say a thing. He said that scientists have to avoid both of these extremes in their studies, in particular when we're talking about predictability.
Well, of course, it's just a search for truth.
It's a search for truth. And he said the church will support you, but is duty-bound to insist that science's ability to predict and control must never be employed against human life and dignity. Mm. And I know we're getting close to the end of our time for this show here, which happens, of course, every week. But there's a real interesting story that we can tell you about now, and, you know, you can go on the internet and find more details. But I thought it was absolutely incredible. On Tuesday, Pope Benedict, through his envoy, Cardinal Renato Martino, in a concrete gesture of solidarity towards third world countries, bought the first bond issued in London on Tuesday by the IFFIM, the International Financing Facility for Immunization. And they're going to use the billions that they expect to raise by this to vaccinate millions of children and adults against malaria, cholera, and other diseases. And interestingly enough, the next five bonds bought after Pope Benedict was the purchaser of the first one, which they have a face value of $1,000. The next five people were the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, the Chief Rabbi of Great Britain, Jonathan Sachs. And then we had leaders from the Muslim Forum, the Hindu Forum, and the Sikh Council, S-I-K-H, Council of Britain. A very, very interesting story, very interesting background to the IFFIM. And this was the brainchild, by the way, of Great Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, mm-hmm. Gordon Brown.
Well, I can speak from my own experience in Zambia. I know the amount of effort that goes on in the developing countries to have a couple of days each year when every child in the country under the age of five receives those vaccinations. And it doesn't matter how remote the village is, they can be vaccinated on those days. And that is through the generosity of organizations like the Rotary Club that pay for that
many
to
groups.
Happen, and it's a wonderful, wonderful gift.
Well, and
to
according
the world.
To the World Bank, a vaccination package, which vaccinates against a number of different diseases, is $17 a person, in this case a child. But they're hoping to save between 5 and 10 million lives between now, as we speak, and 2015. So a very, very worthwhile project.
And on that note, thanks.
You've been listening to Joan Lewis. To find out more about Joan or to ask her a question, please visit our website at vaticanradio.org.